reality of everything he'd let himself get mixed up in. In trying to rescue the prince, he'd managed to make enemies of the most powerful man in Tel Rir, the man who could send legions after Aaron and the others if he decided to, and who had enough money to hire any amount of assassins to do his dirty work for him. He frowned down at his left arm, not that the man would need an army of assassins to get the job done just now. In Aaron's current state, an old lady with a broom would probably suffice. What the fuck am I doing here? He thought, not for the first time. A man would have to be insane to hang around the very place he knows Belgarion will be. He waited, out of habit, for Ko's reply, but the virtue apparently didn't deem his thoughts worthy of an answer. He could feel, even as he walked down the deserted streets, the men closing in, hunting him like a wild animal, and instead of hiding, like he had some sense, he was competing in a damn tournament that he had no chance to win for a shot at murdering a man he'd have no chance of murdering. A fool's errand, one that would certainly end up with a walk through the keeper's fields. Still, he found that what bothered him more wasn't the thought of his impending death, but the thought that he was going to fail Grial and Adina. They were counting on him, and he was going to fail. He turned a corner and started down the main road. Here the foot traffic was much heavier, with people heading into or out of the better part of the city, or haggling at one of the many merchant stalls crowding the lane. Among the milling press of bodies, Aaron picked out guards patrolling the streets in ones and twos, placed there, no doubt, to keep order among the increased population of the city's poor district. He snorted at the thought. From his experience, the bastards were probably the worst criminals in the city. Then again, for all he knew, one of those slack-faced, shabbily clothed men, one of those women with the dead eyes, or their children with their hungry stares, could be killers hired by Belgarion. He felt the hairs on the back of his neck rise, and the space between his shoulder blades began to itch. There. That man at the nearest stall pretending to argue with the merchant over some trinket. He'd been staring, hadn't he? There was a sound to his left, and he whipped his head around to see two children running past, playing at a game of chase. He realized that his hand was gripping the handle of one of his blades so tight that it ached, and he forced himself to take a deep, calming breath as he remembered words his master had told him so many years ago. Fear has killed more men than all the swords and arrows ever made. It had seemed like foolishness at the time, and he was pretty sure he remembered making some flippant smart-ass remark about it. But now he understood all too well as he struggled to calm his rapidly beating heart. "Don't stop. You're being followed," came Ko's urgent voice. Aaron started down the street again, resisting the urge to turn and look. "Who?" "I don't know," the virtue said. Her voice sounded tense, scared. "There's too much noise. I can't—" "That's fine," he thought grimly as he turned down an empty side alley. "Let them follow. He may be wounded and hunted, but damn it, he wasn't dead yet." Despite the light of the day, shadows clung to the walls of the buildings on either side of the alley. He put his back against one of them and slid his sword free. Several tense seconds passed before he was able to make out the sound of approaching footsteps. "Aaron, wait," Ko said. "Not now, Firefly. Be quiet." There was another step, then another. Judging by the sounds, there were two of them. "That's all right," he thought, a cruel grin spreading across his face. Wounded or not, he was sick of being chased around the whole damn country, and these two bastards were about to find out just how sick. "Wait, Aaron," Ko thought. "You can't—" "Enough," he shot back, blocking out her words. "They're the ones chasing me, now let me do my work." There was a flash of cloth as the first one stepped around the corner, and Aaron let out a roar of anger as he shot forward, swinging the sword overhead. "Short fucker," he thought, as his sword continued its lethal sweep. Someone let out a whimper, and his eyes shot down. He stared in shocked realization at the person in front of him. Not a soldier or assassin at all, but a young boy that couldn't have been more than 10 summers of age. He grunted as he tried to arrest the forward motion of his blade. He managed it, but only barely, and the blade quivered inches above the blonde-haired boy's head. There was a frozen second when the kid stared, wide-eyed, at the blade merely inches from his face. Aaron's nostrils filled with the sharp, pungent smell of piss and a puddle began to grow at the youth's feet. The moment passed, and the kid collapsed to the ground on his butt, letting out terrified, screeching whimpers as he inched his way backward along the pavement. Suddenly the owner of the second pair of footsteps, a heavy-set, middle-aged woman with a limp, dull brown hair tied up in a bun, came around the corner. The woman gasped in shock and fell beside the boy, hugging him tightly against her heaving bosom.
"What did you do?"
she demanded of the sellsword, piercing with an angry gaze. Aaron stared, confused.
I don't...
"You don't what?"
the woman shrieked, as the boy cried against her, and he realized with growing dread that the red-faced, thick-jowled woman was the boy's mother.
"What's wrong with you, you bastard? Does it make you feel like a man to wave your sword at children?"
"What? No, of course not. Listen, I thought..."
"Oh, I very seriously doubt you thought much of anything,"
the woman shot back, and he noticed people staring curiously down the alley as they walked by. "Perfect," he thought. "Just what I need."
"Well, what were you thinking?" he demanded, suddenly angry. "Why were you following me?"
"He saw you fight,"
the woman screamed.
"You were his favorite. He just wanted to see you. You monster!"
"I tried to tell you," Coe said. Aaron sighed heavily as he knelt down in front of the kid. He looked into the boy's watery gaze, saw his bottom lip was trembling. "Listen, kid. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to."
"Don't you get near him."
The woman was back to her feet faster than Aaron would have thought possible given her weight, and slapped him in the face, hard. She jerked the boy behind her and began to back away from him, waving a sausage-sized finger at him in warning.
"Don't you come near us. Guards! I want the guards," she shouted, turning toward the street. "Someone get the guards. This man tried to kill my son."
"What?"
he asked, shocked.
"Lady, what in the name of the gods are you talking about?"
But the woman was too far gone now, screaming and wailing at the top of her lungs for the guards. He noticed with dismay that a crowd was beginning to gather, drawn by the mother's screams like flies to shit. It was only a matter of time, he knew, before the whale got her wish, and the guards began to show up as well. He opened his mouth to try to explain what had happened, but shut it again when he looked into the faces of the crowd and saw the anger building in their scowls and the hard set of their jaws. They, like the woman, were past reasoning. The woman was screaming as if he had killed her boy, and in answer to her shouts, the kid had begun to wail loudly. He considered waiting for the guards so that he could explain what happened, and immediately dismissed the idea. In his experience, guards cared little for the truth at the best of times, and with the excess of people and no doubt crimes the contest had drawn, they'd be even less willing to listen than usual. If he was lucky, he'd end up spending the night in a cell for his trouble, a cell that with all of the people chasing him, he'd never make it out of alive. More likely, though, they'd hang him and have done. So instead of waiting for his fate to come to him, he employed a skill that any successful sellsword cultivated. He ran. He darted down the alley, slammed into a wall as he made a sharp turn, and kept going, leaping over beggars and ignoring their cries of shock as he wound his way through the maze-like side streets, putting as much space between him and the crazy lady as he could, and heading in what he thought was the direction of the inn. Finally he emerged out of the alley and onto the main road of the city, panting and gasping for air. He glanced behind him and was relieved to see no mob of angry, kid-loving fat women barreling after him. He propped his hands on his knees and tried to get control of his breathing. A few passers-by took in his sweat-covered face and heaving chest with strange looks, but not murderous looks, so that was all right. He looked around and saw with relief that the ramshackle inn was only a short distance up the lane. He forced himself to take calm, measured strides as he headed for it. The last thing he needed was to attract attention. Well, any more attention at any rate. "What in the name of the gods was I thinking?" he muttered angrily to himself. "I think," Coe began, "best you stay quiet just now, Firefly," he interrupted gruffly. Adin and Grile were sitting at the bar waiting on him. As he entered, they both jumped up from their stools and hurried toward him.
"Where have you been? We thought—"
Adina paused as she glanced around the room. Deciding that the inn's patrons were too busy drinking or swatting playfully at the harried serving girls to pay her any attention, she turned back.
"We've been worried sick."
I'm all right, he lied. Pulling a sword on kids? Charging down alleyways like a damn maniac?
Buddy, you're about as far from all right as it gets.
The princess looked at him dubiously, as if she could read his thoughts. But where were you? Why are you so sweaty? Did something happen?
He hesitated.
You could call it that, I guess.
Sir, Grile said, his face apologetic as he looked between the two of them.
What might... He winced, and his mouth worked soundlessly for a moment, before he cleared his throat and tried again.
What your wife means to say is that she's glad you're all right. We both are. But if you still intend to fight in the tournament, we'd best be heading to the arena. It won't be long before the matches start again.
Aaron nodded, struggling not to let his relief show on his face. He'd done a lot of pretty shitty things in his career as a sellsword, but he was just fine not sharing the fact that he'd pulled his sword on a child, even if the kid was a whining brat.
You're right. Come on, let's go.
He could feel Adina frowning at his back as he led them out into the road and started toward the tourney grounds.
What happened, really? She asked, and the determined look in her eyes assured him that she wasn't going to let it go.
As they walked, he told them about the note and about meeting with his old master. They didn't interrupt him as he relayed the tale, but as he spoke, he noticed the princess getting angrier and angrier. By the time he was finished, she looked ready to chew iron and spit horseshoes.
I knew you two knew each other.
He nodded.
I would have told you, but I couldn't. Not in the arena where anyone could hear.
Oh? She asked, her eyes flashing.
So why didn't you tell me about the note? We could have come with you. What if it had been an ambush?
He didn't answer, and she grabbed him, forcing him to a stop.
Tell me why you didn't tell us, she demanded, and he suddenly thought he knew how her servants must have felt, but though her voice was angry, her eyes were pleading. Why didn't you trust us?
Trust you? He asked, incredulous.
Trust you?
He shook his head angrily.
Him! He hissed. Don't you get it? I didn't trust him!
Her eyes widened in shock.
Yumi?
Yes! He interrupted.
I didn't tell you about the note, and I didn't take you two with me, because for all I knew, it was an ambush. And if it was, there was no point in all three of us being killed, was there?
She didn't answer. Instead, she stood staring at him, a strange look in her deep blue eyes.
What? He asked.
Look, I might be an asshole, but I'm not a monster. I couldn't just let...
Suddenly, she reached her hands behind his neck and pulled him into a kiss so deep, so all-encompassing, that he completely forgot what he was going to say.
Instead, he reached his arm behind her back and pulled her closer, all his thoughts and worries vanishing as he felt her body, soft yet firm, yield to his embrace. He had no idea how long they'd been at it when he felt a tug on his shoulder.
Sir, we really should be going.
I'll kill him, Aaron thought. The princess pulled away, her cheeks and face flushed.
Oh, of course, Grile, you're right. I'm sorry, I don't know what came over me.
Aaron frowned at the Chamberlain, then back at Adina.
You sure he's right?
She smiled, and he could see the laughter in her blue eyes.
Come on, we wouldn't want you to be late.
He stared after her as she turned and started down the street. He turned to Grile, and the Chamberlain must have seen something in his eyes because he cleared his throat uncomfortably and hurried after.
Aaron watched him go and sighed heavily as he started after them.
Yeah, you're right, he muttered. Wouldn't want to be late.
Chapter 39 As soon as he stepped out of the armory and got a look at the other contestant, Aaron knew he was in trouble. The man that approached the center of the circle from the other armory had dull brown hair, a face and build that was completely unremarkable. He was both shorter and smaller than Aaron himself. He wasn't handsome or ugly, only very plain. He was the type of person that people forgot the names of minutes after meeting him, uninteresting in every way. None of these things were what bothered Aaron. What bothered him was the man's walk. His father, years ago, had told him that you could tell a lot about a man from how he walked. Did he shuffle along, his head down, each step taken as if it was a chore, avoiding people's eyes. Or did he swagger, staring at those around him in silent challenge? At the time, his father had been trying to educate his son on the importance of understanding people's motivations, and therefore how to best lead them, imparting a small bit of knowledge that he claimed was invaluable for any general or leader. Back then, Aaron hadn't thought anything of it. It hadn't been the first time his father had given him a strange lesson, and he'd just been happy to be able to spend time with him. But later in life, he discovered that his father had been right. In fact, many people of similar backgrounds shared the same walk. Farmers, merchants, nobility, they could all be identified by the walk they used, and so too could soldiers. The walk of a fighting man wasn't the weary, purposeful walk of a farmer, nor was it the sauntering, vain strut of a noble. Instead, it was the confident stride of a man who knew how to handle himself, a man who had shed blood before, who knew he would shed it again, and wasn't much bothered by that. The man's hands never strayed far from the sword at his side, and his dull brown eyes took in the crowd in the stands, the announcer and Aaron, in an assessing, calculating manner as he stalked into the circle. Not the walk of a soldier, Aaron thought, revising his opinion as he entered the center of the circle and stared into the man's eyes. The walk of a killer. The brown-haired man smiled at Aaron, revealing straight, white teeth. "He knows he has me," Aaron thought as he frowned back. "Knows it like he knows the sun is shining. Knows it like I know it."
"Ladies and gentlemen, I give you Finn Dalton and his opponent, Roderick Alarn," the announcer shouted, and then jogged toward the edge of the circle to the wild applause of the crowd.
"Just me and you," the man said, as he slid his sword free of its scabbard. Aaron pulled his own sword free in reply.
"Begin!"
the announcer shouted, and before the word was finished, the brown-haired man shot forward with alarming speed, his sword blurring as he attacked with a flurry of jabs and slashes. Backpedaling furiously, Aaron only just managed to avoid getting his stomach cut open. By the time he brought his own blade around for a strike, his opponent had already backpedaled away. They began to circle each other, and the brown-haired man smiled.
"Are you scared yet?"
he asked in a low voice that only Aaron could hear.
"You know that you can't beat me, don't you? You know that you're not good enough, especially not wounded like you are."
How does he know that? Aaron thought. Is it really as easy to see as Darrell said? The man dashed forward once more, and all thought was pushed from Aaron's mind as he was forced back under the heavy rain of blows. Chapter 40. Adina gasped as she watched Aaron retreat from the other contestants' fearsome barrage of strikes and lunges.
"Come on, Aaron," she whispered fiercely, her hand tightening on Grile's. "Come on!"
She took a relieved breath as the sellsword managed to circle away from the other contestant, batting his sword aside in a desperate parry and putting some distance between the two of them.
"He won't win," a voice said beside her,
and she turned to see the old man, Aaron's one-time master, beside her on the bench. The man watched the combat with a resigned expression, and to Adina's eyes, he looked as if he'd aged 20 years in the last few hours.
"You don't know that," she shot back angrily. "You don't know."
"But I do," he said, his voice sad. "Look at him. His wounds have stolen his strength."
Adina turned back to the fight and saw with dismay that Darrell was right. Aaron's chest was heaving, and his feet were moving sluggishly. Gone was the smooth grace she'd seen him use when fighting Lucius's two bodyguards.
"No," the old man said beside her, his voice angry. "This fight should never have happened."
"Please, dear," he said, meeting her gaze with his steely grey eyes. "Tell him to yield. Yell it to him, before he gets hurt worse. The blades are blunted in tournaments, but mistakes have happened before. Please, he may listen to you."
Adina hesitated, unsure, and the other contestant waded in behind a flurry of flashing steel again. Aaron worked his sword through desperate parries with more skill than she'd ever seen from any of her father's soldiers, but he was weak from his injury, slower, and in a burst of movement, the other contestant knocked Aaron's blade wide and brought his sword in a slash across the sellsword's chest. Aaron shouted in pain as the sword cut across him, and he reeled away drunkenly. The princess felt her breath catch as the sword came away dripping red. Even from this distance, she could see that Aaron's shirt had been sliced cleanly through and was staining crimson from his blood.
"It can't be," she whispered. "The blade is supposed to be blunted."
Her own thoughts were echoed in the confused mutters and whispers of the crowd. She turned to the old swordmaster. "It shouldn't have cut so easily, should it?"
"No," he answered, his lined face grim. "No, it shouldn't have. Something's wrong."
"We have to do something," Gryll whispered fiercely beside her. "Sir Aaron is in trouble and needs our help." The heavy-set chamberlain rose from his place on the bench and was immediately pushed back down by a thick-necked bull of a man who seemed to have appeared out of nowhere. The man wore no colors, but plain, simple leather trousers and jerkin. A sword was belted at his waist.
"If I was you, fat man," he said, gesturing to six similarly clad men who'd moved up to stand behind him, "I'd worry about myself. I'd say you've got plenty of trouble on your own."
He turned to Adina with a cruel grin.
"Wouldn't you, princess?"
Chapter 41 Aaron took two stumbling steps back and glanced down in shock and pain at the bloody cut across his chest. Luckily it wasn't deep. The steel had only just made contact. Another couple of inches, and he'd be a dead man. He turned back to the brown-haired contestant and saw that the man was still smiling.
"Who are you?" he asked, keeping his blade between them as he circled warily.
The man fainted with his blade once, twice, grinning as Aaron brought his blade up to parry blows that never came.
"Doesn't matter who I am, does it?"
he asked, as he circled his blade low, confident that Aaron had nothing left.
"What matters is what I'm here for, and I think you know that, don't you? You came here to kill me."
"Oh?" the man asked, his eyebrows raised in an expression of mock surprise.
"And why would I do that?"
"Because you're one of Belgarian's soldiers." The man's eyes narrowed.
"I'm not anyone's soldier, fool," he hissed.
And then abruptly he was smiling again.
"Then again, I guess you could say that I'm everyone's soldier, as long as the price is right."
Aaron nodded as the man confirmed what he'd already known.
"An assassin."
The man shrugged.
"So many bad connotations to that word. I prefer to think of myself as a problem solver, and you are a problem that a certain someone is willing to pay handsomely to get solved."
He grinned wider. "Funny thing. When I took the job, I thought that the hardest part would be finding you. After all, the North is a big place, and I didn't relish the idea of freezing my balls off in this frozen wasteland just to dust some arsehole who managed to piss off the wrong person. Imagine my surprise, then, when I tracked you to here. To Baresh."
He laughed and shook his head. "You must be one dumb bastard," he taunted. "It's like you wanted to die."
"Co," he thought, "if you can do anything for the pain, now's the time."
"I'll try, but I won't be able to hold it back for long," the virtue answered, her young voice sounding impossibly tired and strained.
Immediately, the pain lessened. Didn't disappear, but lessened enough so that he could move his left arm, and he could no longer feel the cut on his chest at all, despite the blood that still leaked from it.
"I'm not dead yet," he answered the assassin.
The man grinned.
"Not yet."
Even before he was finished speaking, he was dashing forward, his blade whistling as it darted through the air toward Aaron's throat. Instead of retreating as he had before, Aaron lunged forward, ducking under the blade and whipping his blunted blade around at the man's midsection. The brown-haired man grunted in surprise and just managed to get his own blade back in time to stop the strike. The air rang with the sound of metal striking metal, and they stood there, their swords locked, each of them struggling to force the other's blade aside.
"Just die, you bastard," the man growled, his smile gone.
Aaron didn't waste energy talking. Although Ko was alleviating his pain, he was still weak, and it took all he had to keep the smaller man's sword at bay. Still, he knew that it wouldn't last long. Already he could feel his strength leaving him, and he knew it wouldn't be more than a matter of seconds before the assassin managed to knock his blade aside and finish it.
"You've already lost," the man snarled. "You just don't know it yet. Your woman and the fat man, both of them are as good as dead. See for yourself."
Aaron shot a glance over his shoulder and saw that Grael and Adina were no longer sitting on the bench, but being forced back toward the entrance of the arena by a group of rough-looking armed men, and though several of the people in the crowd were staring curiously, even angrily, no one made a move to stop it.
"Gods, no."
He pushed harder, forcing more strength against the other man's sword, so that the assassin had to exert more pressure of his own. Then, without warning, he pulled his left arm away from the sword. The second that he did, the man grinned and knocked his sword aside. He was still grinning when Aaron let out a growl of rage and smashed his fist into the man's face. There was a loud crack as the assassin's nose snapped, and he bellowed in agony as he tumbled backward, his sword tumbling to the ground. Aaron dove on top of him. "Kill me, will you?" He drove his fist into the man's face again. The assassin's head rebounded off the tightly packed earth, and Aaron clamped his hands around the man's throat and began to squeeze. A small part of his mind noted that the arena had grown eerily silent. The only sounds to be heard were his own growls and curses of rage, and the assassin's choking gargles.
"Stop!" an unfamiliar voice shouted. "I'll be damned if I do," Aaron thought,
and he didn't flinch as the assassin struck him in the sides, didn't feel the pain at all. Instead, he squeezed harder, digging his fingers into the man's throat. He felt a twinge in his side and looked down to see a knife sticking out of it. "Must have been hiding it in his tunic, the bust." The rest of his thoughts were blasted from his mind as Ko suddenly let out a wretched, agonized scream so intense that he was sure his head would shatter from it. The virtue's tortured wail stretched out, impossibly long, and soon he was shouting himself. Not at his own pain. The virtue was still blocking that, but the impossible, gut-wrenching dimensions of Ko's agony. An agony that he somehow felt without feeling. An agony that he knew was supposed to be his own. He snarled, feeling as if he'd go insane from the terrible sound of Ko's scream, but his grip on the assassin's throat did not relent. The man's lips were turning blue, and his eyes bulged from his sockets, but he still managed to get his hand around the blade and twist it. The pain was a faint, distant thing, but Ko's tormented scream rose in pitch, threatening to drive all rational thought from his head. He held on to one thought with the desperation of a drowning man struggling for the surface. Adina. They were going to kill Adina. He didn't know how long he'd crouched there, growling and cursing and squeezing, his eyes closed against the virtue's agony. But when he finally looked down, the dead man's eyes stared back at him in a look of surprise, and his own hands trembled and shook violently.
"Aaron," the virtue whimpered, "I can't hold it back any more." "Not yet, Ko," he thought back. "Not yet. They have Grael. They have Adina."
He struggled to his feet and took several shuffling steps in the direction of Adina and the others. Then, without warning, an agony like nothing he'd ever felt tore through his body, a roaring inferno that drowned out everything else. The strength went out of his legs, and he crumpled to the ground, howling in rage and pain.
"Get up, damn you," he thought fiercely.
But his legs wouldn't respond to his demands. Snarling, he started forward at a crawl, his expression set in a grimace of twisted rage. His chest heaved, and his straining effort caused fresh blood to pump out of the wound in his side. Darkness started to creep its way steadily into his vision, and he fought against it as he dragged himself across the dusty ground, heedless of the bloody trail he left in his wake. The darkness grew deeper, so that his vision consisted of a thin, rapidly shrinking tunnel. Then, like some beast that had been lurking, waiting for the right opportunity, the darkness reared up, relentless and implacable, and pounced. As he slipped into unconsciousness, he could just make out the sound of footsteps beside him.
"Get him," a man's voice said, and then it was gone.
And there was only the pain, and the darkness, and then nothing at all. Chapter 42. The men led Adina and Grael toward the arena's entrance. Adina tried to think of some way to escape, but her thoughts kept going back to Aaron, to the bloody cut across his chest, the last thing she'd seen before the men had taken her. And that scream. Had that really been Aaron? Was he dead already? Please, she thought desperately. Please let him be okay. It's your fault, a part of her said, as hot tears glided down her face. If not for you, he'd be safe in the Downs. If he's dead, you killed him as much as the man with the blade. She wanted to make the world a better place, a place where people didn't have to live in fear of Belgarin and his men. But she had failed. Elladan had died. Aaron was most likely dead, and it was all her fault. She was so overcome by her brooding thoughts that she wasn't aware the men around her had stopped until she bumped into one of them. The soldier turned and slapped her contemptuously across the face, and she cried out in shock and surprise, a hand going to her bloody lip. "Watch where you're going, bitch," he hissed, before turning back to gaze at something she couldn't see past the soldiers in front of her. "Get out of our way, old man," the leader growled. "Let them go, and I'll be happy to," a familiar voice said. "I don't have time for this shit," the leader said, drawing his sword. "Kill the stupid bastard." As the men fanned out, Adina saw that the old man, Daryl, stood facing them, his sword held low at an angle to the ground. The soldiers started forward in confident swaggers, and the old man watched them come, his face expressionless. The closest of them brought his blade up to strike, and Daryl exploded into motion. He lunged forward, impossibly quick, and his sword lashed out and took the soldier in the throat. This unlucky victim took a stumbling step back, and his sword clattered to the earth. Before the others had a chance to react, the old man took two quick steps back, out of the range of their swords. The man he'd struck wavered drunkenly, then fell to the ground in a thrashing heap, the hands he'd brought to his throat staining crimson in moments. The soldiers glanced at each other, stunned, ignoring their dying comrade. "Watch her," the leader said to the man closest to Adina. Then, as one, he and the remaining three roared and charged, and the old man disappeared in a flurry of swinging and stabbing steel that flashed with deadly promise in the sunlight. Adina watched, terrified, expecting the old man to be cut down. Instead, he weaved in and out of the storm of blows like the wind, ducking slashes, sidestepping thrusts, and knocking the blades of the soldiers harmlessly aside. To the princess, who'd often watched her father's and her own soldiers practice, he didn't appear to be fighting at all, but performing some intricate, elaborate dance.
"Kill him!"
a frightened, whining voice shrieked.
"He's ruining it! He's ruining everything!"
Adina turned and saw Claudius standing out of his seat, a turkey leg still in his hand. The fat man's face was deep crimson with anger, and even across the arena, Adina could see his jowls shake as he waved the piece of greasy meat like a sword and pointed it at Daryl.
"Kill him, and bring the princess to me!"
At the Duke's command, guards began to rush out of the benches and across the grounds like ants swarming out of their hive. More than 20 men all told, sprinting across the grounds toward the old swordmaster, who was too busy fending off the attacks of the remaining soldiers to notice.
"Look out!"
she shouted, as a young blonde-haired man, faster than the rest, charged up behind Daryl, and the old man moved just in time to avoid a blow that would have split him in two.
"Run, girl!"
he shouted, his voice hoarse, as he parried another blow and kicked the nearest man in the stomach, sending him to the ground.
"You and your man, get out of here now!"
Adina knew that the old swordmaster was right. She should run, survive, bide her time. Belgarin might soon gain control of the north, true, but he hadn't won yet, and as one of the royal line, she was better equipped to undermine her brother's schemes than anyone else. She also knew that, though she'd had some training with a blade at the hands of John Hervend, her father's captain of the guard, her father had insisted that all of the royal line knew enough to protect themselves, she would die if she stayed. Perhaps given a dueling rapier and matched against one of them, she might have had some small hope, but they'd never give her a chance. Once they finished with Daryl, they'd cut her down with no more thought than a butcher slicing hog's flesh. And that was if she was lucky. These men were not nobles or duelists, and she doubted very seriously if they'd ever even heard of Irallion's treatise on the proper etiquette of formal dueling. In truth, She would have been surprised if any of them could read at all. Better to run, to hide, to survive. She knew all of this, yet she hesitated, her eyes locked on the doomed swordmaster as he fought an unwinnable fight. When her feet did finally move, she was surprised to find that it wasn't in the direction of safety, but toward the carnage. She'd taken only 3 steps when a hairy arm wrapped around her neck and jerked her back. In an instant, a knife blade was poised, scant inches from her eye. "Move and die, bitch," the remaining guard growled into her ear, and she almost gagged at the overpowering, rotten, whiskey stench of his breath. The chamberlain took a step toward her, and the soldier tightened his grip, bringing the knife to her throat. "Not another step, fat man, or the bitch dies, princess or not." Guile froze, and Odina just had time to notice that the chamberlain wasn't looking at her or the man, but over their shoulder, behind them, when the soldier let out a grunt of surprise. He fell, taking her with him and landing on top of her. The air was knocked out of her, and she struggled wildly for several seconds, anticipating the feel of sharp steel tearing into her, before she realized that the man wasn't fighting back. Finally, she managed to push herself out from under the soldier. Breathing hard, more from fear than exertion, she scooted backward across the dusty earth, trying to put some distance between her and her guard. She looked to see how close he was, and froze in shock. Sticking out of the back of the man's neck was a dagger that looked as if it should be hanging in some collector's showroom. The handle was adorned with gold, and at its base held a large, sparkling ruby. Blood, sickeningly similar to the color of the gem, pulsed from the wound in spurts. "What?" she began, then hands were grasping at her by the arms, pulling her to her feet. "Come on, we have to go," a voice urged, and she let out a gasp of surprise as she saw that her savior was none other than Celeste, the blonde-haired, blue-eyed bartender from May's Club back in Avarest.
"You!"
Adina exclaimed.
"But how?"
"No time for that," the blonde answered grimly, the playful, flirtatious manner she'd shown in the Downs nowhere in evidence. "If you want to live, we've got to get you and your man out of here. Now." Adina let herself be pulled along several paces, before jerking her arm away and turning back to where Darrell fought desperately for his life.
"Wait, what about him?"
More guards had arrived, attacking in unison, and the old man's sword was a blur as he struggled to keep the web of steel at bay. 3 soldiers lay dead on the ground, another 2 writhing and screaming, as they gripped the bloody stumps where their sword hands had been moments before. Still, the swordmaster wasn't having it all his way. He bled from a cut across his chest, and one of his arms was cradled against his side, stained crimson from a long cut on his forearm. A short way off, more armed men were rushing toward him.
"We can't leave him. He saved me."
The blonde woman pulled at her.
"Dar knows what he's doing. Now come on. Don't make it for nothing," she hissed angrily.
Reluctantly, Adina forced her eyes away from the older man and followed the bartender, looking back once to make sure that Grile was close behind.
"We have to get to Aaron," she said, as they pushed their way through a gathering crowd of stupefied, slack-jawed onlookers.
"For a girl who can't even save herself, you sure do have a lot of foolish ideas," Celeste snapped.
"Now stop acting like a spoiled princess who expects everything to go her way and come on!"
The woman burst into a sprint, tugging on Adina's arm, and the princess was forced to follow or have her arm ripped from its socket. Soon they were out of the arena grounds and running through the empty streets. They wound their way through so many back alleys and side passages that by the time Celeste slowed to a walk, in one of the wealthier parts of Baresh, Grile and Adina were both panting heavily, pouring with sweat, and Adina, at least, was hopelessly lost.
"This way," the woman said, as she led them up to the wrought-iron gate of an expensive-looking house.
"We can't break in here," Adina thought. "I've seen these kind of gates before. You won't be able to force them." The blonde arched a delicate, perfectly shaped eyebrow at her.
"Break in? Of course not."
She turned back to the gate, and in moments, an elderly bald man appeared and opened the gates.
"Mrs. Celeste, welcome back. They're waiting for you inside."
"Thank you, Ollo," she said, as she led the confused princess and chamberlain up the cobbled walk, past richly colored and meticulously maintained gardens to the front door of the sprawling home. She knocked once,
and the doors swung open.
It can't be, Adina breathed, as a familiar face smiled back at her.
Chapter 43 Aaron didn't wake so much as get torn out of unconsciousness by the many pains and hurts that he'd acquired over the past couple of weeks. By themselves, each was enough to explain the film of cold sweat that covered his body and convince him that his time had finally come. Soon he would begin the last walk through the Keeper's fields and would become nothing but another slave toiling under the God of Death's yoke. He thought of Adina and felt a deep pang of sadness. Sadness, but not surprise. Saarland's priests claimed their God was the most powerful, the most worthy of worship, because everyone who was living was steadily marching toward death. Aaron supposed if that was true, then given his lifestyle and profession, he'd been flat out sprinting. The truth was, he'd known his death was coming, had known it for a long time. He'd never deluded himself into thinking he'd die old, surrounded by loving children and squalling grandchildren to mourn his passing. If he was surprised at all, it was only that it had taken this long. "There now," a rough male voice said beside him. "Relax. It's all right." He tried to open his eyes, but he found that he didn't have the strength. It was as if weights had been tied to his eyelids. "Drink this," the voice told him, and he felt something pressed against his lips. He supposed that it was poison. For a moment, he considered drinking it. At least it would make the pain stop. It was a mixture of thoughts of the princess and his own stubbornness that kept his lips tightly sealed. The bastards could kill him if they wanted. He was in no shape to stop them. But by the gods, they were going to have to get their hands bloody doing it. "Co," he thought, struggling to keep his thoughts coherent past the waves of pain on which they floated. "Where are we? What's happening?" The virtue didn't respond. "Co?" Still there was no answer, and Aaron began to worry. What if she'd absorbed too much of his pain, taken too much of it into herself, and doing so, had died? There had been a time that he would have laughed at such a thought. After all, how could a glowing ball of light die, and what did it matter to him if it did? Well, the fact was, it did matter now, and that was enough. The glass pressed against his mouth more urgently. "Drink," the owner of the voice said. "It will help. It will help the pain go away." "I don't doubt it," he thought, but he was too weak to reply, even if he wanted to. The question was there something in the drink that would kill him? Or only some remedy that would bring relief to the hot agony that coursed through his body? He decided that it didn't make sense for it to be poison. After all, if Belgarin's men wanted him dead, all they had to do was stick a knife in him and be done. More likely, they wanted him to get better so they could question him about everything that had happened. Not much point in torturing a man that was already dying after all. He considered not drinking it anyway. Why give the sons of bitches the satisfaction? The problem was that the pain was growing worse, more insistent. Reluctantly, he opened his mouth and let the liquid pour down his throat. "That's good," the disembodied voice said approvingly. "Drink all of it." Whatever the mixture was, it tasted bitter and left a sharp aftertaste in his mouth, but he complied readily nonetheless. He hadn't realized how parched he'd been until he tasted the cool liquid. The voice said something else, but he couldn't make it out. The dark river of unconsciousness on which he'd floated suddenly surged up, pulling him under, and he gave in gratefully. Chapter 44 He awoke later to the voice asking him to drink again. He did without hesitation, and realized that the all-encompassing pain he'd felt before was nowhere near as bad as it had been. He still felt impossibly weak, and his side throbbed where the assassin had plunged his knife into him, but he could think past it now. "Co, are you there?" Still no answer. Once he'd finished drinking, the glass was pulled away, and the owner of the voice made a satisfied sound. "How are you feeling?" "Like death warmed over," he thought, but didn't answer. "Well?"
He tried to speak, but all that came out was a dry croak. He swallowed and tried again.
I'm okay.
He was shocked by how frail his voice sounded.
You're many things, I reckon, but okay is not one of them, the voice responded. Not yet, anyway.
Who?
He paused to clear his throat.
Who are you?
Why don't you open up your eyes and see for yourself? Slowly, reluctantly, Aaron did, and let out his breath in surprise.
It can't be. You're dead.
Well now, Balin said, grinning widely. There's dead, and then there's dead. I'd think you more than anybody would know something about that.
I'm not dead, he muttered, wincing at the rawness of his throat. I'd be a lot more comfortable if I was.
The first mate grinned.
As you say.
But how? Aaron asked disbelievingly. When we left Aster and his men were boarding the ship, how did you get away?
As to that, the first mate said, rubbing his hand across his chin, I'm not so sure as I understand it myself. One minute the bastards were coming aboard, fixing to cut us down. Then Laomin took that Aster fella aside and talked to him for a minute. Next thing I knew, I was laid up on a table getting sewed up by one of his men. Mind you, the man weren't no doctor. He grimaced at the memory. If anything, I guess he's a blind butcher, but he managed anyway.
How did Laomin talk his way out? That Aster is crazy. I know, I've met him.
Balin nodded. You're right there. The man's a few fish short of a full string, but he let us go just the same. He gave us some money to help us on our way.
He shook his head in disbelief.
As to what the captain said, I ain't got a clue. I was in pretty bad shape there for a while, and not much up for listening to too much of anything. Besides, he said, grinning, ain't you ever heard the cap talk? A man could talk mermaids out of the water.
Aaron frowned. It was true that Laomin had a way with conversation that made him hard to understand, and that he also had a way of getting people to do things they didn't intend to do. He'd seen that readily enough when the captain had somehow managed to talk the princess into going and getting Grail, when all she really wanted to do was throttle Aaron. But he still couldn't believe that the man had somehow talked his way out of Aster's hands. There was something strange about that, but he couldn't worry about it just now. His thoughts were on the last thing he'd seen before he'd lost consciousness, Adina being led away by soldiers. Balin must have seen something in his face, because he patted him on the shoulder reassuringly.
You're worried about your woman.
Don't be. She's as safe as can be.
Why, she spent so much time by your bed here, I figured she was about to sprout roots. That man of hers, too.
Finally, the boss made her go and get some rest. Said it weren't doing no one a bit of good for her to kill herself waiting. She didn't want to, but she finally did it anyway. Got a real stubborn streak in her, that one does.
Aaron opened his mouth to speak, but stopped as the shouts and cheers of what must have been hundreds of people sounded outside.
They found us, he hissed, clenching his teeth, as he stared across the room at the window. It was too far for him to see out of, but he had no problem imagining the mob gathering below them in the street, only too excited to welcome their new leader with a celebratory execution. The first mate glanced at the small window in confusion.
What are you ta-
Oh!
No, no, you got it wrong, Aaron. That ain't nobody come to get us.
Why, it's just a parade.
Aaron frowned, rubbing at his temples.
Parade?
Balin nodded with a frown of his own.
That's right, for Belgarin. Since Claudius announced him ruler of Baresh and all of its outlying lands, there's been one every day. Near as I can tell, the prince means to hold a week's worth of the damn things, just in case there's some poor blind deaf bastard out there who missed it the first five times.
Five? Aaron asked, incredulous.
That's right. One a day since he was crowned.
But that means...
He hesitated in disbelief.
You've been out for the better part of a week, the first mate confirmed. The tournament's over and done, and Belgarin sits in the seat of Baresh, leastways until he heads back to his own country.
So we failed, Aaron said in an emotionless, dead voice.
I failed. Belgarin's been crowned.
You're living. There's something to be said for that.
Suddenly, Aaron wished desperately that Ko would speak, though he'd been loath to admit it. Still was, in fact. Talking to the virtue had, in many ways, been a comfort. But she's dead,
a voice in his mind said. Dead and gone, like so many hopes and dreams. He felt a black mood descend upon him, and suddenly he felt more exhausted than he ever had in his life. Talks Asta into letting you two live, and manages to get Adina to do what he wants? Your Parnan certainly has a way with words, Balin.
Huh? Oh, no, sir. It weren't the Cap who convinced her to leave your side. Why, he wields words like a blade master wields swords. But I doubt even he could have managed that. No, it was the boss, you see.
Aaron looked at the man blankly, blinking heavily.
What are you talking about? Who's the boss?
Balin grinned.
Well, might be I'll leave that for you to find out on your own. After you've had some rest, that is.
Aaron nodded, letting his eyes fall shut.
I am tired.
The first mate snorted.
Why, of course you are. You've been lying around all day.
Chapter 45
The next time he came to, Aaron opened his eyes and was greeted with the sight of Adina staring down at him. Her dark hair was a tangled mess, and her blue eyes were bloodshot and wet with unshed tears. He thought that he'd never seen anyone or anything so beautiful. She leaned in and kissed him warmly, and for a moment he forgot all about the pain, all about the failure that hung over his head.
"You're awake," she breathed, finally pulling back. "Balin told me that you were, but I couldn't believe it."
"The gods must have a sense of humor," he said, smiling. Adina was starting to say something else when the door swung open and Captain Laomin strutted in. The Parnan captain was wearing a massive purple hat with feathers in it, a bright green silk shirt, and black leather trousers.
"Our hero awakens," he said, grinning widely and displaying his bright white teeth. "Balin tells me that soon you'll be fit enough to trim a sail or swab a deck. It's good for a man to rest, but sometimes he must rest from his rest, must he not?"
Aaron grinned back at the Parnan despite himself.
"I have no idea what you're talking about, but it's good to see you breathing just the same."
"Yes, well," the captain said, adjusting his hat and appearing embarrassed. "It is a state which I find most agreeable."
"Balin was a little foggy on the details," Aaron said, "but I can't understand it. How did you manage to get away from Asta?" The captain hesitated, then smiled knowingly at Aaron.
"Oh, we have our little secrets, don't we? A man can't go around telling everything there is to know about himself. Why, he would appear vain, and I make it a point to never appear vain."
Aaron started to laugh, but paused as the door opened again. He watched in shock and confusion as a familiar figure walked inside the room.
May?
The club owner wasn't dressed up in the expensive clothes and jewelry that she was known for. Instead, she wore a simple woolen shift, and her long hair was tied into a ponytail. She smiled widely at Aaron, walked to the bed, and wrapped him in a tight embrace.
"Silent, I'm so glad you're okay."
Aaron was suddenly struck by the certainty that he must be dreaming. Either that, or he was dying, and even now his mind was wrapped up in an elaborate death vision. What else could explain the presence of these people here, in Baresh, weeks of travel away from where he'd left them?
I don't understand.
Mael smiled kindly.
"Oh, Silent, it's so good to have you back.
We, she said, glancing at Adina, were worried sick."
"We all were,"
Laomin said, nodding his head to Aaron. As if reminded of the captain's presence, May turned to frown at him.
"I thought we had agreed, Captain, that you wouldn't bother him until he was well. Why, your idle chatter will convince him to take his own life before you're through."
The captain put a hand to his heart.
"My dear lady, I assure you—"
"Why don't you go check on Herb and Balin and the others?" May interrupted with a frown. "Poor Ollo's probably got his hands full, trying to keep them from burning the whole place down." The captain scooped his hat off his head and bowed deeply to May, winking at Aaron as he did.
"I am happy to see you awake, Mr. Envelar, but I find that my presence is required elsewhere." He began to saunter leisurely out the door.
May growled, low in her throat, and the captain cringed visibly before rushing out of the door. Aaron laughed despite himself. It was good to see his friends again. Once the Parnan was gone, May shook her head, smiling.
"Laomin is a good man,
and a damn bit smarter than he lets on, but his talk is enough to drive one of Nalek's priests to murder. Not to mention he's more stubborn than any pack mule I've ever seen. Adina laughed, and May glanced at her, arching an eyebrow. I don't know what you're laughing at. You're not any better. Adina stared at the ground, as if properly chastised, but her lips spread in a smile, and despite their failure, despite the fact that he'd very nearly died, Aaron felt himself smiling back. Sure, they may not have been able to keep Belgarin from taking the north, but he no longer felt as badly about that as he had. They'd lost a battle. That was all. There would be others to fight before it was done. And he'd decided then, basking in the innocent beauty of her smile, the laughter in her bright blue eyes, that he would be there for that. As his father had often said, there was more than one way to plough a field, but nothing ever got done without work. Here the work to be done called for a sword, not a plough. And that was fine. He didn't know the first thing about farming. A thought struck him, and he turned to the club owner. Wait a minute. Balin said that the boss convinced Adina to rest. May raised a perfectly shaped eyebrow. And? I don't understand. The club owner smiled widely. Not yet, Silent. But you will. Let's just say that you, Gryle, and the princess here aren't the only ones who don't want to see Belgarin seize power. In fact, you're all kind of late about getting into this whole rebellion thing. Why, we've been at it for years. We? He asked. He glanced at the princess suspiciously, but saw that she looked just as confused as he felt. The club owner let out a throaty chuckle. Well, you didn't really think that I could afford such beautiful dresses just from the money I made off the club, did you? He hesitated. I guess I never thought about it. She sighed heavily and glanced at Adina. Men. They never do. She turned back to Aaron. Why silent? I love the club, certainly, and I wouldn't trade it for the world. But the truth is, it started as little more than a front. For years now, we have been working against Belgarin, undermining him as best we can with what little resources we have. It isn't much, but... That's not possible, Adina cut in. My men keep... She paused then, and a look of anger and loss passed across her face. Kept track of all the rebel groups in the major cities. I remember specifically sending a group in search of Avarest. It was thought that one of the realm's only remaining neutral cities must surely contain a rebel faction. In the end, nothing was found. The bartender laughed until she saw the hurt look in the princess's face. I'm sorry, hun. It isn't that you or your men were incompetent, but the people of the Downs spent most of their lives hiding or fleeing. It would take a lot more than a couple of soldiers dressed in rags to get the better of people who have stayed alive only by making an art of not being noticed. But, Adina frowned, if that's true, you could have helped. Her stare grew hard, her eyes like twin chunks of glacial ice, cold and forbidding. When she spoke, her voice shook with barely restrained anger. If you would have come to us, helped us, my brother might still be alive. May's expression grew sad. Prince Elidan, your brother, was a good man, a man of compassion. Rest assured, princess, that we did everything we could to save him. Everything, that is, except for giving ourselves away. You didn't do anything, Adina said, her voice angry. You were so scared of showing yourselves that you let those bastards kill my brother when you could have helped him. It was the club owner's time to be angry. Yes, we could have shown ourselves, but that would have done nothing but get a lot of good people, people who have supported Elidan and worked against Belgarin for years, killed for no good reason, people with families, with lives of their own. If we'd shown ourselves, how long before Belgarin's squads showed up in the Downs? Avarest may be neutral, and so removed from the majority of the chaos the war brings. But even we know what your brother does to people who get in his way. If we had, how long before those people and their families were jerked from their homes and put to the sword? The Downs doesn't make warriors, Princess. It makes survivors. We have our strengths, to be sure. But the greatest of these is our anonymity. Without that, we are no more to your brother than an itch on his royal arse, and as easily remedied. We are not soldiers, she regarded Aaron. Well, most of us anyway.
But surely you could have done something, Edina said, and it was not anger that choked her voice now.